Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Tuesday, December 13th. Today, we're talking to Colorado Sun environmental reporter Michael Booth about a system that is exchanging the heat from sewage into energy to keep buildings warm. Before we begin, want to help support visual journalism at the Colorado Sun? The Colorado Sun's photographer, Olivia Sun, is a Report for America core member. Report for America is a nonprofit organization which places talented emerging journalists into local newsrooms. To learn more, visit coloradosun.com/RFA. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this day in 1908, Steamboat Springs changed forever. As one Rout County newspaper declared, quote, "It was then that David H. Moffett's gang of railroad workers entered the city limits, leaving two shining rows of steel behind them that connected that place directly with Denver." But Steamboat Springs' history starts before then. The town's founders, James and Margaret Crawford, and their three children came to Colorado Territory in 1873. The following year, they homesteaded along the Yampa River. The Crawfords enjoyed cordial relations with neighboring Utes, especially the Yamparica leader Colero, into the 1880s. Other settlers joined them in building a community called Steamboat Springs, named for the chugging sound of a hot spring that reminded some of a riverboat's engine. After the railroad arrived, Steamboat Springs won the county seat in 1912. 2 years later, Norwegian ski jumper Carl Howelson astonished a crowd of 2,000 people with his acrobatics. Once the tools of doctors and mail carriers, skis emerged as a popular pastime for Coloradans and visitors the world over. His jumping site evolved into the state's oldest continually operated ski area, Howelson Hill. James Temple, who grew up on a nearby ranch, opened a ski hill on Storm Mountain in late 1958, which grew into the Steamboat Ski Resort. Since 1935, the high school has boasted a marching band that skis down the street. Today, Steamboat Springs is one of the premier ski and vacation destinations in the world. Before we continue, a quick message. You can help the Colorado Sun receive a $5,000 matching grant. Now, through December 31st, the Sun will receive $5,000 in matching funds if it gains 42 new members for as little as $10 a month through the News Colorado Needs program. Visit coloradosun.com to join and learn more today. Now our feature story.
Welcome back to the Daily Sun Up Podcast, Colorado.
I'm Carol Wood, guiding you through today's conversation, and I'm grateful to be here with you and with Michael Booth, the Colorado Sun's environmental reporter. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Carol. Thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure.
Ditto. And we always get to talk about fun stuff, but today's a little bit fun and different, and that is we're talking about sewage and a sewer treatment plant that you're going to be writing about this week. Folks can look for the story at coloradosun.com. And you and one of our photographers, Olivia Sun, went and visited this plant on the grounds of the National Western Stock Show this week.
Fun things with sewage, just things you never thought would be an advantage to take off of all the things that are literally running underneath our feet through pipelines. Yeah, it's an amazing building. So the Colorado State University has been building the Spur campus on the grounds of the National Western Stock Show for the last few years to bring an annex down to Denver and to bring its great education and classes and interchange of ideas and knowledge to the stock show and to all of Metro Denver. And to heat their buildings, they wanted to, because they're also very interested in renewable energy and climate change, they wanted to be involved in something different in terms of how they're going to heat these brand new buildings. And there's other interests that wanted to be involved in this too. Metro Wastewater, which handles all of our water recovery, Metro Recovery, they now call it, wanted to do a couple things. One, they are also interested in alternative energy. They are also interested in lowering the temperature of the wastewater that comes into their facility and then ends up after it's treated in the South Platte River, because you don't want to dump hot water or even very warm water into the South Platte. It changes the ecology, changes the environment, and is not good for the plant life that and the fish life that has grown up and is accustomed to cooler temperatures.
Right. And why is that hot, Mike? Why is the sewage hot?
Well, you don't think about it too much, but when you're flushing the toilets and doing things like laundry, for example, or the dishwasher, the hot water that makes your dishes so clean or makes your clothes so clean ends up in the sewer. And when it runs through, it loses some heat along the way. But even by the time it gets down to the South Platte River and the treatment plants that Metro Recovery has in that area, it's still too warm for their purposes. And so what could you do with that heat? Well, one thing you could do that this company took us around today is showing around the world is you could use a heat exchange. So you take this sewage that is running at maybe up to 70 degrees underground, and you bring it up in pipes, and then you have a clean water pipe next to it in a heat exchanger, and it picks up some of the temperature from that that sewage and then takes it in clean form over into these buildings at CSU and exchanges the heat and blows that air throughout the building. And it works both ways. So then in the wintertime, you've got excess heat temperature that you're using to heat the buildings. And in the summertime, it's cooler than the ambient air. And so you're using that sewage water to exchange with cool water and running that through the buildings and using that to cool down those buildings in the heat exchange.
That is some innovation. That is real innovation. And so is this already happening, or is it about to get underway?
It's actually underway and changing the temperature in these buildings at CSU. And as they add buildings to the complex, both at CSU and potentially throughout the National Western Complex, there is more capacity to take these pipes and lower the energy costs and the energy use at a bunch of different buildings throughout the complex. But since April, it has been turned on, and they're still kind of working out kinks in terms of understanding exactly how such a large system, it's the largest system of this kind that this company has built. And so they're still learning from it as they go in terms of how it's going to work and how to keep it running efficiently. And, it is actually in place and doing good work.
Wow. That is, it's really fascinating. One of the things I'm wondering, who is the company that's doing this, and where are they based?
Sure. So the main technology is Shark, SHARC, and they're in a coalition, a partnership with another company called Centrio and a couple of others that does these developments. And they do everything from the financing of it, which is a long-term finance, sort of a public-private finance arrangement. And then they also create the equipment and then install it and then spread it around the world as they learn about it. So they've got projects in Toronto. They've got projects in Washington State. They are hoping that the technology, it's sort of a perfect technology for a large sewage operation like Las Vegas hotels. And so Las Vegas has a lot of energy problems that are getting bigger every year because the Colorado River is not producing as much hydroelectric power as it has in the past. And they need to replace that power. And they need to heat their buildings in other ways. And so this is high potential for doing that.
You know, and you answered one of my questions was going to be, what are other applications for this, and are some in place? It sounds like maybe in Canada and elsewhere, there are some already in, you know, that have been running for a while, huh?
Well, really anywhere where sewage flows is a potential. And as they get better at it and the cost comes down as they install, they can be more competitive with other kinds of heating and cooling. So it could be, you know, in Florida, the ambient air is 90 to 100 degrees. And if you've got sewage flowing underground that is only at 70 degrees, you have a way to capture the difference in those temperatures in an advantageous way. And so that's what this technology does. And again, they learn more about it every year. The more they install them, the more they understand how it can save money and save energy.
What a great tour to have had and to see this happening. Can't wait to look at the story that you and Olivia went and reported on. And we'll look for that later this week. And I was going to mention for our listeners, the National Western Stock Show complex that we referenced and where CSU, Colorado State University, is building this spur campus is in North Denver off of 46th and Humboldt. So I think the official address is 4655.
And there's all kinds of things, Carol, that are going on there every day that people might want to just click over and learn more about. And we'll be writing about more of them. But they do things like growing herbs and other produce on walls inside the campus buildings. They are doing surgery out in the open for veterinary clinics, where somebody who had, we were meeting with for this tour, had just been over at one of these buildings and was a little bit shocked that they were doing a surgery where you look through the windows and they're working on dogs and other animals there as part of their education effort. And so for people who are inclined that way, it can be just a fascinating day of touring around, and people should check out Spur and see what's available.
Right. It sounds like it. I used to go over there every January as a kid growing up with my family for the National Western Stock Show and Rodeos, and tend to not go over there other times of the year. And it sounds like this is a great reason to.
Absolutely. Spur's doing stuff year round.
Great. Well, thank you for explaining this to us and dropping by. And I hope you have a great rest of your day, Mike, and to everybody out there. Thanks for listening to the Daily Sunup podcast. And I sincerely hope that you can join us for our next episode.
Read more on this story at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. The mandatory recount for Colorado's 3rd Congressional District is complete and confirms Republican incumbent Lauren Boebert will retain her seat. A Colorado Sun analysis of the money put into the race shows it was the most expensive per vote of all the federal races in the state. Boebert spent $43 per vote. Her Democratic challenger, Adam Frisch, received very little support from national groups and spent $32 per vote in the massive district. Frisch conceded last month, but state law mandated a recount because the margin of victory was so small. The draft plan for reintroducing wolves to Colorado calls for bringing in 30 to 50 gray wolves over a 3 to 5 year period, starting in 2024. The initial draft comes 2 years after voters approved Proposition 114 and hundreds of hours of meetings. The essence of the plan is impact-based management, so conflicts between wolves and domestic livestock will be addressed on a case-by-case basis. Per the plan, the top issues for wolf conservation in Colorado are social tolerance for wolves and economic impacts. Now, the proposal will go through a public process for any suggestions or updates before it is approved in May. Colorado oil and gas regulators are creating a working group as a prelude to new rules to manage the cumulative impacts of oil and gas drilling. The group is likely to include representatives from industry, environmental, and community groups and state agencies. The Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission took the step after 6 environmental and community groups petitioned for cumulative impact rulemaking. But industry reps said proposed rules might make it impossible to drill in the state. Since the state agency's mission was changed to protecting public health, safety, and welfare in 2019, more than 5,000 oil and gas wells have been drilled in Colorado. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again on Monday. Now, a quick message from our editor.
I'm Larry Rickman, editor and co-founder of the Colorado Sun. The Sun is a public benefit corporation, and we rely on the support of listeners and readers like you to produce the nonpartisan, in-depth news that Colorado needs and deserves. Please consider becoming a Sun member for just $5 a month. Learn more at coloradosun.com. Thanks.